I am Tim Tetzloff. I am Director of Conservation at a wonderful place called Naples Zoo at Caribbean Gardens, which has been around for over a century.
Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my raw safari. Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome back to the Raw Safari Podcast. All right, so this episode today is a pretty special one, y'all. Now, you may have seen, if you read what's coming, that this is an episode from the Naples Zoo, but we don't really talk about the Naples Zoo very much. That's because my interview is with Tim Tetzloff, who is the director of conservation at the zoo and does all kinds of stuff with all kinds of cool conservation organizations around the world. This guy is awesome, and this episode is really inspirational. But as you can imagine, a traveling conservationist and a touring drummer really had quite the challenge getting this interview to take place. This was recommended to me quite a while ago, actually by Elizabeth Johnson of the Naples Zoo and the Mothering Wildlife podcast, which if you haven't checked out yet, you really should, especially if you are a mother. So Elizabeth recommended that I talk to Tim, and Tim and I touched base almost immediately and were very excited about meeting up and connecting. And then he was doing his thing, and I was doing my thing, and we kept emailing and we kept trying. We even ended up in the same place at the same time, at least once, but it wasn't a good time. But finally we made it happen, and now I'm bringing the interview to you. And if it isn't amusing enough that it took forever to make the interview happen, remember when I was messing around with Conservation Tales, which was a short form podcast that I had on this feed that focused entirely on very quick tales of conservation at accredited zoos and aquariums? Unfortunately, in case you guys have been wondering where Conservation Tales is, it seems like the audience just wasn't into it. Those were my least downloaded episodes by far. And on top of that, when I had my computer go kaput and I lost some data, most of what I lost was Conservation Tales information. So I did decide to put that on hold for now. I still want to bring it back, but I want to do it right and make it as popular as, you know, these interview episodes and zoo news. So maybe that's a goal for 2024. We'll see. But the point of bringing that up is that originally when I talked to Tim, I mentioned Conservation Tales. I thought he would be a good fit for that. And I told, you know, it'll be like a 15-minute interview, maybe reach 20 minutes. And then by the time we actually connected, I forgot I had told him that. And we got on the horn and he's like, so what, you said what, 10-15 minutes? And I was like, crap, I was hoping to do a full interview with you. And he was like, no, that's totally cool. So we ended up talking for close to 50 minutes, I think, you know, is what you guys will hear. And then we just stayed on the horn and talked for like another hour about conservation stuff and what I could be doing to get more into the world of conservation, and Tim just sharing stories of his life, and we just kind of bonded. It was super cool. But it was definitely the longest 10 to 15 minute interview ever, since I think we hit 2 hours. I'm so grateful for that time, though. Tim is just such a cool dude. And this episode, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but if you're not inspired by this, I would talk to a doctor. You're going to need to check your pulse or something, because this is just a really cool, really interesting, really unique episode from a really cool, really interesting, and really unique guy. So before we get to that interview, a quick reminder that, you know, you should hit subscribe, make sure you don't miss any episodes of Raw Safari, that you can follow along at Raw Safari on socials, at Raw Safari Pod on TikTok, all that good stuff. You could join our Patreon by going to patreon.com/Raw Safari to help support the pod and get cool bonus audio from some episodes. Yeah, all that good stuff. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here is my interview with Tim Tetzloff, the conservation director of the Naples Zoo. I love the Naples Zoo. I've had so much fun there, done some amazing interviews there. And for those listening, you'll know the name Elizabeth Johnson. And she's been on the pod multiple times and now has her own podcast that I produce, Mothering Wildlife. And Elizabeth set this up and was like, if there's one person at our zoo you need to talk to, it's Tim. So excited to have you on. And I've noticed that people in your position have the coolest offices, and you have the coolest office. It looks so jam packed with so many cool things. And I've noticed that with some of the other directors of conservation that I've spoken to.
We get to go to fun places, and there are some wonderful souvenirs you pick up along the way.
Yeah, no doubt. So real quick, before we get into the work that you're doing, tell me how you got to where you are. What's your journey been?
Well, nepotism is a beautiful thing. My mother and father actually started the zoo here in 1969.
Wow.
So at that point, it was a historic, not yet a historic botanical garden, but it was a botanical garden that had been turned into the typical Florida attraction in the 1950s with, you know, beautiful macaws and botanical settings. And then they introduced the wildlife here in the late 60s. And so that's the environment I grew up in. So you mentioned my office. And for those listening, there's a quote from my father. The name of the game is conservation on my wall. And that dates from before the Endangered Species Act was passed. And so I grew up in a household where conservation was something we talked about. And so that is the shoulders I got to stand on. So I take that responsibility greatly that other people start at a different place. I was given a head start. So I've got a greater responsibility to do what I can with what I've been gifted.
That's very cool and very Spider-Man-y of you. great power, great responsibility, all that. But no, that's really cool. I actually find that really interesting because, you know, I think the way that a lot of people look at zoos historically is that they were just menageries until very late in the game, maybe the 80s or 90s. And that's when the focus on conservation really got started and animal welfare really got started. But it sounds to me like your parents were either ahead of the game or that your take on that view is maybe a little more nuanced than that general understanding. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. So it's an oversimplification to say that conservation is a recent thing within the zoo community. And this is a nuanced conversation. You know, if we didn't have zoos with their eyes on the ball of conservation, we wouldn't have bison today. So, and that dates back to the early 1900s. So we've got some longstanding work that's happened within the zoo community. But in the broad brushes, yes, the zoo community has definitely stepped up their game in recent decades. I'll give the example. My father, when he was down collecting for Toledo Zoo in South America in the 60s, he went out, he was looking for, I believe it was orioles, and had some guys that were going to show him where the tree was with the nests. And as he was walking along, he noticed that some of these guys had axes. And it's like, well, that's weird. Most of them have machetes or something. But so they got there and they point up and there are all these, you know, many nests in the tree. And so he understood that the guys with the axes were there to just chop down the tree so you can take all the nests. He was just like, oh, no, I'm going to climb the tree. I'm going to get 6 nests and then we're going to leave. And the dozens of other ones are going to be fine. And they kind of looked at him like, well, that's the hard way to do it. So those kind of stories are what I grew up with. So I wouldn't say that everything we did from that point forward had the same kind of conservation vibe that somebody would expect today. But you know, at one point surgeons figured out they needed to wash their hands before they stuck their fingers in a patient. So things evolve over time and get better.
That's really cool. I really love that story. I don't know. I think you're right when you say it's an oversimplification, but at the same time, that's where my head has been with it. It's very interesting to hear that and to hear it like literally firsthand, you know, this was your life. That's very cool. So moving into your world, although I would love to interview you about your parents sometimes. That just sounds amazing.
That is a good interview. Junglary.com if anybody wants to dig into that.
Oh, okay. Very cool. I will definitely check that out. Thank you. Tell me what your job is right now. What is like the goal of what you do?
Oh, the job of every director of conservation, save the world. So, drilling down to more specifics, basically, I'm looking for opportunities where our institution and me personally can make a significant difference on a project for a species. So, you know, we've got wonderful network, wonderful connections. Dr. Luke Hunter, who oversees big cat conservation in 25 plus or 30 countries for Wildlife Conservation Society. I've known him since the 90s, but where I am right now, I'm not going to move the needle on tiger conservation. So that's not where I'm going to focus. But there are other opportunities that present themselves where you just network and you find where things lead. So one of the roles I have right now is chair of Madagascar Fauna and Flora Group. And that started back in the 90s when, and this is a plea for anybody, when they have an opportunity to do good for somebody, take the chance and do it. You never know where it leads. I got this was back in the days of the text only listservs, and somebody was at another institution. We were looking for a Malagasy translation to do some theming at a zoo exhibit with lemurs. And I'm like, well, I don't speak Malagasy, but I know some folks who have been to Madagascar. So one thing led to another. I got the translation for him, but I was introduced to then chief of staff, Dr. Eva Sargent at San Francisco Zoo. And that connected me. And I looked at their website and said, well, you know, I'm not the best graphic designer in the world, but I have some skills and I can provide a better website than you have now. And so as that connection grew and my skills grew over that time, it led me to becoming an advisor and then eventually to 2018 being elected chair and Naples Zoo being the international headquarters of this consortium with members on five continents who want to do good in eastern Madagascar. So there's a lot of opportunities out there and you never know where things can go after what they started. So I love networking, knowing as many people as I can, because you never know where you're going to be able to step in and do some good. I just got back from Tanzania and had 2.5 days of meetings with Ngorongoro Conservation Area Authority on black rhino conservation. Would never have been possible without me making a friendship 13 years ago with a naturalist at one of the lodges up on the rim of the crater. And as our connection grew and we started doing smaller things together, it leads to bigger things. So we've got about 20 long-term projects that we work with. And almost all of them started out with some step like that, where you were introduced to somebody and then you saw this is an opportunity. And so it led from very simple things to, some tents that the rangers needed when they were following the rhinos to right now we're waiting on the import process for 2 Toyota Land Cruisers for the rhino rangers that they're going to be able to use to protect those animals.
Nice. That's really cool. That actually gives me like kind of goosebumps, honestly, because one of the things. So, you know, I started Raw Safari just a couple years ago, not having any idea what I'm doing in this world, by the way, figuring it out as I go. But it's the same thing. I saw an opportunity. I saw what I saw as a need and I took it. And building connections has been one of the biggest things that I've been doing. And most of the coolest things that have happened in the conservation world for me have come from just random connections and talking to people. And suddenly you're doing voiceover work for a film to try and work on penguin conservation and weird stuff like
That's
that.
Awesome.
It's been cool, but it's also like, I'm a person who often wonders, like, what am I doing? Like, where can this go? And why aren't I doing more? And I can get in my head about that. But it sounds to me like basically what you're saying, not just for me, but for anyone listening, is that building those relationships and starting small and doing little stuff is then what leads to you ending up getting Land Rovers, you know, imported and the bigger stuff that you're doing. So that's really cool and inspirational. I really appreciated hearing that, honestly.
Yeah, no, that is, and as anybody who ever filled out a survey for any conference, what's the main reason for attending? Networking. I mean, you got to have the sessions. There's a lot of ideas that are sparked there, but those connections are absolutely crucial. I mean, it was at one of those conferences where I was saw Dr. Luke Dollar. He's been involved in Madagascar since the 90s. Has tons of Mighty Boots research on fusas, and went up and introduced myself after that. And, you know, fast forward and I'm pulling into his field site and he's offering me a warm three horses beer. Yeah. So you never, and yeah, to extend that out. So, introducing myself to Luke, that, led me to, we now fund four of his field staff. We fund 27 field staff in seven countries. But the connection with Luke, he comes here every year. He'll be down here in a couple weeks. He reaches out to about 3,500 fourth graders every year. It's a great program we have here at the zoo. We have K through five that we reach about 20,000 students, and the kids in the classroom get to stand up and ask their questions back and forth with a researcher either here at the zoo or like we have the East Africa Coordinator for Giraffe Conservation Foundation that talks to the kids from Nairobi. So, nice. I mean, you get some great opportunities for kids. But those conversations with Luke, he was here 1 year and I was meeting him for dinner. And as we were talking, at the time, he was the manager of the Big Cats Initiative for Nat Geo, which he did for almost a decade. And as we're talking, he's like, you want to hear about the program that's got the biggest bang for the buck? And I'm like, one more beer, please. Yes. And so he mentions Dr. Lely Lichtenfeld and African People and Wildlife and this living walls concept. And so we started talking again, fast forward that safari. I just got back from co-hosting. My co-host was Dr. Lely Lichtenfeld. And so seeing their programs on the ground, the Living Walls, the Women's Enterprise Center, all kinds of amazing community work that helps, helps both people and the wildlife, which is a big part of what I like to do with all our conservation projects, is they're so inherently connected. Favoring one over the other is going to hurt both in the long run. So there's just a lot of things that lead to one another if you just open up to those opportunities. And the biggest thing, there's a talk I do actually for some students and interns. And one of the things is just pick a direction and go. It's easier to steer a boat when it's moving. And at worst, you'll go, oh, yeah, this is not what I thought it was. Turn around. Or wow, this is really cool. I like doing this, but I want to do this different flavor of it. But again, it's the one of the most difficult things when somebody says, "Hey, I want to do conservation." I'm like, "Great, what's your passion?" They're like, "Everything." And I'm like, "Oh, that's so hard to work with." But if you have one thing where you've got just a little bit of extra interest to be able to follow that passion, and then be wide open to change. You know, another one of the people that is doing amazing work that we're proud to support is Dr. Amy Dickman. And, you know, when she was a little girl, she said, you know, want to be in the Serengeti studying lions. And then she finds herself down in Ruaha National Park and, you know, further south in Tanzania, park nobody's ever heard of for the most part, but doing amazing things. And eventually she's, you know, director of Oxford Wild Crew. So being open to that change is really good. I mean, my mom, she was going to be an insurance underwriter. Then she met my dad. Then she finds herself in the jungles of British Guyana. So, you know, be open to good things happening.
That's very cool. I like that. And I'm kind of curious, you know, I love all of the conservation-y stories, and I want to get some of your tales of travel and stuff. But you're at the Naples Zoo. And the Naples Zoo is, you know, obviously an AZA-accredited facility, so you do need to have some conservation work. I know that's part of accreditation and everything. But what is, like, wow, you're funding, you know, you said 20-some people, you know, their lives, their careers, their work, all that stuff. You're getting in these vehicles. What is the benefit to the Naples Zoo of doing all of that? Because it's not like they promote it a lot. I mean, sometimes, yes, but you go to the, you know, their Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and it's the new orangutans or the new, you know, South America exhibit area that has opened up this week, I believe, and I want to come hang out with a tapir. But that's a different story. But yeah, so
they
like,
cool.
They're very cool animals. So why does the zoo do this?
Part of it is it comes down to leadership. And so if the leadership puts horsepower behind it, then it's going to happen. And historically, we had this focus. And when it moved from a family institution to a nonprofit, and then with the director who's now been here 10 years, Jack Mulvena, my boss, in the very first interview that I had with them when we were interviewing directors, you know, for potentially taking the position, I could see conservation was in his heart. And I was just like, that's awesome. Because he was also wanting to push for more local conservation. And I'm like, this is great. This is somebody that I'm going to enjoy working with. And so the value to Naples Zoo is, one, people who want to work in this field care about wildlife, care about conservation. It's really hard to be passionate and want to work for a place that doesn't give a damn about that. In fact, I had a journalist one time said, wouldn't the staff just like to have all that conservation money dumped into their salary? And it was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, keepers definitely deserve to make more money than they do in this world, without a doubt. But at the same time, you don't necessarily want to work for a place that doesn't put their boots on the ground and make a difference in the wild side of this. The point of having a zoo is not just for people to see animals, but for people to engage and make sure the planet that we know now is the planet that's going to exist into the future and with the wildlife that we love.
That's awesome. I wish more organizations outside of the zoo world would realize that. But again, that's a whole other podcast episode. So let's dig in a little bit. We have had a hard time connecting. You and I.
Sorry,
I think,
about that.
No, it's me too, because I travel a bunch too for other stuff, but nothing like you. And you know, I think we tried connecting back when I think back when I was in Naples at the beginning of the year, and here we are almost a year later connecting, and it's literally just because you are so busy with this stuff. We've even been in the same place at the same time. Like, we were both in Columbus at the same time and could not connect. So talk to me about, like, how often you travel and what your life is like.
So the travel opportunities have increased over time. So my baseline is 2 safaris a year. And then I use that opportunity to connect with other programs in the area. So that's, like I mentioned, African People and Wildlife this last time, but also with the Rhino Rangers at Ngorongoro. I've also taken time in between safaris to head up to Uganda. I'm on the board of Giraffe Conservation Foundation, so being with their team up in Murchison Falls in Uganda to see that desnaring work, and that's... So sorry, party foul. Zoo Radio. It's usually on the conference calls. You're wondering who's going to be the first one to do that.
Trust me, on this podcast, I'm always waiting for it.
Yeah. So it's been remarkably quiet. That's why I thought I'd turned it off. But yeah, so you never know where all these opportunities are going to happen. But there's also with Madagascar Fauna Flora Group. As I mentioned, we're an international consortium. We've got members around the world, so we spread the travel pain for our annual meeting. So this year, I leave in a couple weeks for New Zealand and Australia. Wellington Zoo is graciously hosting us. And so they've been doing some amazing work. Their director, Dr. Karen Fifield, is amazing. And Daniel Warsaw, who's their one of their leaders there, has been really involved. In fact, he's a treasurer of MFG. So got that coming up. I mentioned the board work with GCF. So going to be in Namibia in January. And then I'm trying to work in travel down to Brazil. We've got several projects we support there. Dr. Arnaud Debier has the Anteaters and Highways Project, as well as a giant armadillo conservation program. An amazing team he's built, the capacity building he has done, the team under him and working with them is extraordinary. Seeing where they went from one guy with a camera trap in 2009 to, 20 plus staff today is amazing. So, plus also we, Parque das Aves, Carmel Crew Camp, who heads that up. She's second generation in the field like I am. Extraordinary work. So travels down there and, right in Foz do Iguaçu by Iguaçu Falls National Park. And that property itself is extraordinary. When you see it from the sky, you can't tell the difference between the national park and their Parque das Aves bird park there.
Wow.
It's amazing. And they have these like 20 meter high aviaries and an intact rainforest that they build this in, which requires an Egyptian pyramid level of people working to create this stuff in such a pristine environment. So, yeah, so I get to go to some wonderful places around the world and builds those connections and opens doors for more opportunities. And that face to face is what builds the trust. Right now, I don't happen to have a bunch of camera traps or GPS collars in my office, but that's a normal thing for me to hold that for folks from Arnaud Debier's work. So those can head down to his project, just be able to serve as a U.S. base for a lot of that equipment to be processed.
That's very interesting. That's I love how multifaceted all of this is. And one of the things that amazes me about the conservation world is I've been in this for a couple of years now. And, I've had Steph Fennessy on the podcast talking about, GCF and everything. And she's amazing. Yeah. And I do a conservation organization shout out on every episode. And we've done Anteaters and Highways so many times that I feel like I know them, even though they haven't been on yet. But then you're naming these other things that I've just never even heard of. And it's so fascinating to me how even being in the world of all of this for the last couple of years, there's so much that I just don't even know exists. And I just wonder if I almost wonder if as a conservation community, we need to do a better job talking about all of this to the public and to each other and everything, or if it's almost easier to just let these things go on, grow at their own rate and figure it out. You'll have people like CCF where Laurie Marker can raise, $300,000 in a month doing one thing, and then other organizations that maybe raise, $10,000 a year right now. And that's okay. We're all working on it at different levels,
Yeah. It's way too easy to get overwhelmed. There's so many good projects out there and a lot of them start small, but then advance. I mean, African People and Wildlife right now, I think has about a $2.5 million budget. Wow. Growing impact around Tarangire National Park in Tanzania, but expanding into several other spots within Tanzania, and now providing training for people from other countries in how to do community work, how to do real collaborative conservation work with communities, which is the necessary evolution and the revolution that we need to get away from elements of colonialism and fortress conservation that have had some pretty bad outcomes.
So how much, for lack of a better word, do you still get your hands dirty at this point in your career?
This is one of those points I like to bring up in those conversations is don't get yourself so far removed that you can't reconnect to what you love doing. So I grew up doing animal care, and I don't get to do much of that anymore, which has been a shift in probably about the last 5 years, where I don't have much of that connection to the collection here at Naples Zoo in the same way I used to. But the opportunity to still get in the field, again, I'm not a field researcher, so that's not one of the skill sets. I am the generalist of generalists. So I greatly value the time to get my hands dirty. So yes, I've run after giraffe to help desnare them, but I was the slowest running guy and the one who took a face plant over a termite mound in the tall grass. So, but you know, happy to be there and, you know, pour water on the giraffe, you know, sit on the neck during the desnaring procedure, you know, do whatever, whatever's needed. But the chance to get out there and be in those environments allows me to be an ambassador back to the community where I can find funds to support that work.
Very cool. I think, what an experience that must be to get to have. And even as you're moving through stuff to still, you know, through the ranks, so to speak, to still be able to have those moments. That's so cool. Can you talk quickly about just a couple of like the coolest field things that you've gotten to do or see?
Ooh. Well, helping to desnare a giraffe was one of the most amazing things to witness. Dr. Sarah Ferguson, she's one of the 27 people we support. She's now the conservation health coordinator for GCF. And to see somebody with that kind of skill level, like I've followed Bushman trackers down in northern Namibia and like just where they can tell one Hemsbok footprint from another, you know, not just from an eland or, you know, some other species, but to like individuals among a species, that's magic. And to see her look at giraffe walking in tall grass and to be able to figure out from a giraffe's funky gait to begin with, which one might have a snare on it. And to see her pick those out and go. And then it's almost like an indie pit crew. She'll get together with them, explain the game plan, you know, measure up the dart. Dart goes in, you've got that 4 to 6, 7 minutes for the atorphine to take effect. And then everything that happens to get that giraffe safely on the ground, you know, get those delicate surgical instruments known as bolt cutters and get the wire off that animal and then have them back up and running. And in the three that I participated in, that whole process was done in as little as 11 and at most 14 minutes.
Wow.
And that includes all that time for the drug to kick in. Right. So it's, you know, a wonderful thing to see how quickly that procedure can be done. And then like, you know, the life changing thing that means for that animal. Cause we did see one of the ones that had lost a leg, to a snare. So knowing that, you know, that's not going to be the case for, the literally hundreds now that they've rescued from snares. That was pretty cool. Being up in Batampuna Strict Nature Reserve in Madagascar, it's some of the last lowland rainforest in Madagascar. Being able to go up and down, and literally up and down, they don't like switchbacks. So going through that forest, and hearing the call of Indri's, you know, they're like terrestrial whales with their call. It's just the most haunting, beautiful thing to hear in the forest. And to be in a place that's not open, you know, to anybody else but scientific researchers is an amazing experience, just for the pristine nature of it all. So it's a gift. It's a great honor to be able to set your feet in some of these spaces. And then just to be able to have people that become your friends. So when you've got, you know, like a long day of when I was with Arno down in the Pantanal, you know, collecting camera traps by foot because the Pantanal flooded early, so we couldn't get vehicles. And so what would have been a very rapid thing turned into a, you know, nearly all day thing, and slogging through some very warm ankle deep water, and then long roads of volleyball court like sand. when you see that patch of grass, you're like, I want to walk on that for a while. So it's, you know, or long travel days where that warm three horses beer from Luke Dollar is a very welcome thing. They're fabulous moments.
That's really cool. I did notice as you've been talking that you are like, you are dropping names, but not in like the way celebrity like name drops happen. You just, you really love these people. You really get to know these people, and you have, I mean, it comes across to me as, for lack of a better word, that you're proud of them. Like you're proud of your friends, not like I'm proud of the cool work that people are doing and I think it's amazing, but you seem very much to like wanna brag on your friends in the best, most like natural way, just like I do with the people that I love the work they're doing and that kind of thing. It's been very cool to hear that and very, very interesting. And it really does illustrate how important these relationships are. They're not just working relationships. You really love these people and what they're doing, right?
Oh, absolutely. No. And I'm so grateful that's coming across, because I mean, I was on WhatsApp with Arnaud last night, and we were actually talking about my travel schedule and how it's a little bit heavy. And he was saying, you know, you might want to drop that one thing. And I'm like, yeah, we need to chat more, you know, just to be able to, you know, cause you're going through similar things. It's so easy to get overcommitted. And I'm in one of those sections of my life right now, where I've just got a little bit too much going on. But it's hard to say no when you have an opportunity to do good and you've got that window of time where you can do it. And I've been blessed with a great position here at Naples Zoo, where I've got a you know, leadership that endorses and encourages what I do for this institution and for the wildlife. And so I don't want to squander that. I've been, you know, going all Spider-Man again. But yeah, been given that opportunity, I want to take advantage of it and not let it go. And these people are truly extraordinary in their commitment, because, you know, I get to come back to a nice air conditioned office, and, you know, a lot of these people are working in really difficult circumstances, and, you know, many of them, and, you know, at times are life threatening. And it's, you know, we still have cheetah conservationists in Iran that can't come home. And we have, you know, one of the things that every chance I get when I take people to Ngorongoro Crater, the overlook, you know, we'll stop over at the monument and look at the plaque for the people who didn't go home to their families because their job was protecting wildlife. And there are people and the animals themselves that sometimes change those plans. We just lost a ranger in Ngorongoro earlier this year to African buffalo in the forest. And so those are very real costs. And so, again, we're their ambassadors. They can't go to all the places we go. So it's our job to tell other people there are amazing, amazing people doing extraordinary work to make the planet that we all hope exists for our great-grandchildren to still be there. I mean, we went from 10,000 black rhinos in Tanzania when my dad was there in the 70s to a few dozen in the 1990s. And that population's now rising, but like, we could have lost it. Could have lost rhinos. We could have lost tigers. You know, the trajectory for tigers in the, you know, 1990s was they weren't going to see the new millennium. But how many people that most people do not know and will never know the names of, risk their lives and just made it all happen. So as you and I talk, there are tigers walking through the forests of Asia.
Absolutely. That's very powerful. That's very cool. I guess I only have a few more questions if we still have time.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So a couple of things that have stood out to me here. But one of which, just because this is kind of a zoo-centric podcast, you know, I am curious, since you're at the Naples Zoo, what is your relationship like with the staff of the zoo? I know that I've become good friends with Vittoria, you know, who deals with a lot of the herps there. And I just casually said, oh, yeah, I'm going to be talking to Tim. And she's like, oh, Tim, that's great. And like was interested immediately. So I know you have some of that going on. And Elizabeth, obviously, you know, connected us. But how much are you a true like zoo staffer in that world?
So you've caught me in a little bit of a lull, because there was a time where I would send the keeper meetings every morning. And as I mentioned, I got a little bit too busy. So I'm not the person I want to be in that regard, because I do like that connection. I was just chatting with Vittoria yesterday because we have the Florida Panther Festival coming up. And so we have one of our partners that does work on the invasive Burmese pythons, Ian Bartizek, from Conservancy of Southwest Florida. He's going to be presenting. So I was chatting with her because, you know, want our staff there if people have questions about the python that we have here at Naples Zoo. And yeah, Elizabeth has been here for years. So I want to connect as much as I can, because having those relationships internally also gives those folks potentially the chance to expand their world. And I'm working on a couple things in that regard. We have a travel fund here at the Naples Zoo, the Glass Travel Fund. So that's a matching grant where staff can go to do field work. And speaking of Vittoria, she double dipped because, I'm president of the Florida Association of Zoos and Aquariums, 24 accredited and certified facilities here in the state. And so we have a matching grant that Ron McGill from Zoo Miami was kind enough
to
fund.
Ron's been on the pod. He's amazing.
He truly is. So he has a matching grant through, FASA, Florida Association of Zoos and Aquariums. So Vittoria double dipped to do some work down in Panama. And so anytime when we have conservationists come to visit, you know, these are my friends, and I don't want to hog their time. I mean, yes, I do want to hog their time, but I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to interact with them. So they always, will do a brown bag for our staff, you know, try to get things where, they can come and hang out. So Danilo Kluber, who is another wildlife vet, with Anders and Highways and the giant armadillo, comes up here three times a year. And so getting the veterinarians and the vet tech, veterinarian and vet techs, out to dinner together so they can chat with all their world. And when we just got them some hematology equipment, so they got the first ever data on giant armadillos this year, first time in history. And it was awesome to get the WhatsApp message from Danilo, showing the video of that printout coming out for the first time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. But being able to have all the people here at Naples Zoo welcomed into those conversations is the goal of mine. So they can have that time both at a presentation, chatting afterwards, or having some social time. After our conservation lecture series, we'll go out to this, tiki bar. Whoever wants to go out, so you can hang out, drink a beer with these folks too.
Nice. Very cool. I have long learned that alcohol is the real key to conservation.
we have several events where we drink for conservation, just lean into what people want to do. We do taps for trees. We, actually this year we just crossed the 1 million mark. We've now planted over 1 million trees. Nice. Through Trees for the Future since 2009. Taps for trees. We do Brew for the Zoo to raise money for panthers, long necks for long necks for GCF, and pints for parrots, and Lager for Lemurs with Riptide Brewing Company. So, I mean, So Pines for Parrots is with Casey's Parrot 41. We just had that in September. So, yeah, there's nice ways of inviting people out to have a few drinks and support conservation and raise a few thousand dollars in a day.
That's awesome. And then I'm curious, just what would you tell somebody who's like hearing you or hearing any of the stories of these incredible conservationists, or even just going to a zoo and getting inspired? And, you know, they're like, I want to jump in. I don't have a biology degree. I want to help save, you know, whatever their target thing is. Cause you already said it's good to have a target, not just be like, I want to save the aminals. And so, you know, what would you say to somebody like, I'm really interested in red panda conservation, so I volunteer with Red Panda Network. I'm really interested in tree kangaroo conservation, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with that in my world. I've got this podcast, but like, I still feel like there's more, and I don't even know where to start with a lot of this stuff, and I'm in the world. To somebody who's not, especially, what would you say, like, here's how you start?
So do something, anything, moving that boat forward or the steering. And so it's looking at the assets that you have. So going back to my story with Madagascar, because I don't have a biology degree. My degree is in education, and English literature, as you would, you know, obviously just assume. So the resources that I had were related to graphic design, originally with Madagascar, before I had a whole lot of other stuff going on. Now, from the age of 16, it was like a whole lot of Madagascar going on in my head. First worked with lemurs around that time and just fell in love. And then the more you find out about Madagascar, the more questions and interest you have. So I just looked for the need that I could fill. So the relationships are super important that way. If you can get that Zoom call or just read blogs, you know, just dig into everything you can. And then you see, oh, they're working on this, or what's their strategic plan? What are their things they're looking to do? Can I play a role in that at all? And if they've got a volunteer coordinator position where you can just have a conversation with that person to say, hey, these are my skill sets, and this is things that I want to do. Is there a role for me here? And there might not be with a particular organization. Like I said, I mean, if somebody, you know, forces me to answer the question, what are your favorite animals? Giraffe are really squeaking in there. But I mean, for decades, it was like, it's a tie between lemurs and tigers. And on the tiger front, like I said, I'm not going to move the needle on tiger conservation. We provide support to the tiger conservation campaign. We're one of the, you know, top donors in that area for the campaign. But like, that's not going to be me. But I had a chance to do some stuff in Madagascar. And so that's where the path opened. So again, just be opening to those opportunities. But it all comes down to relationships. And again, if you can find a way to get to conferences, you know, there's a lot of Zoom conferences, which are a good place to start these days. You get to know, and then the really great thing is once you have a chance to have the opportunity with that person that could, you know, open some doors, if you already know the names, you know, when they list somebody by first name and you nod, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, this is not some, you know, person that I got to take from square one, or that just, you know, loves animals, as you said. But like, they've got some teeth into this. Then you want to make yourself somebody that somebody wants to work with. And when they see your passion and that it actually has some roots, opportunities can happen. But it's also, you know, I've got survival bias on that. You know, just because what I did happened to work, you know, it's like when they looked at the airplanes that survived the strafing in World War II, and they looked at all the places that the bullets hit, and they said, oh, we need to reinforce these places. Somebody said, no, look at the places where the bullets didn't hit, because the planes that didn't come back got hit there. So, you know, the planes that took bullets all through these parts can actually fly back home.
Right, right. That's interesting.
So at least for me, and I think it holds true, relationships are everything, and one relationship can lead to so many others. For me, a absolutely crucial relationship was Larry Richardson at the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge, biologist there. He gave me some great foundations in understanding conservation, and was one of the first people that talked about just the human element and said, you know, if I knew what I was going to be doing with my life, I should have got a psychology degree instead of a biology degree. You know, we know what it takes to save panthers, biologically speaking. The challenge is the people side of it. And one of the great openings now is in the social sciences. And the person that came into my orbit, I think a couple of years ago now, Dr. Laura Perry, she's with IUCN, behavior change coordinator for them up at the Global Center for Species Survival at Indy Zoo. She's been down to evaluate our programs in Madagascar, flying with her in a couple of weeks to our annual meeting in New Zealand, just because I want her thinking in that strategic planning, because the social sciences are so critical to moving forward. And in fact, one of the interns we had here that was thinking about child psychology, and I was talking to her and mentioned, by the way, there are great needs in social sciences and conservation. And she kind of perked up, and we had some additional conversations about that. So there's a wide variety of fields that can have an impact in making our world still look like the world we love into the future.
Very cool. And then I normally at this point ask for a conservation organization you want to give a shout out to, but that's been our entire interview. So is there any way that people who are inspired by what you're doing can help you help these places directly? Or if not, is there maybe an underheard of or underfunded conservation organization that you do want to give a shout out to?
I have mentioned them multiple times. Madagascar Fauna and Flora Group, SaveTheLemur.org, is an incredible organization. We've got members, zoo members, Botanical Gardens universities, but it is a small budget that needs support. And the simplest thing you can do to support them is go to SaveTheLemur.org. You can donate there, or for any of our programs, NaplesZoo.org. /donate. And if you highlight one of our conservation programs, or you just want to support our conservation programs in general, the beautiful part of what we do here is 100% goes to the conservation organizations. There's no overhead taken. So nice. That's a wonderful thing. So if you want to support black rhinos, giraffe, lemurs, lions, we can do it all there. So napleszoo.org/donate, 100% will go to conservation.
It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari Poop Story.
All right. Well, we're gonna take it to the opposite end of the digestive tract for this one.
Okay.
This was about 10 years ago. I was had a stint for about 4 months as general curator, filling in between positions. And so in the evening, after I had finished up some of my jobs before I had to move into some additional work that was part of my other job here at the zoo, I would take a walk around, do a final check on all the animals. And about 7 o'clock one night, I was back at the giraffe and talking to my wife on the phone and, you know, let her know how my day had been, asking about hers. And I looked up, and one of the giraffe was just leaning right over the top of me. And so I looked up, I said hi to him and continued chatting. Next time I looked up, I was still talking on the phone, and a perfectly long string of giraffe spit landed in my mouth. So I sounded like Daffy Duck there for a few seconds, sputtering. And my wife was wondering what the heck just happened. But the upshot of it is, giraffe saliva is a lot saltier. It's a little more saline than I would have imagined. Luckily that has not been repeated since. But I have been coated with that when their little bit of drool gets caught in the wind, that will of course come across. And, wonderfully, I have actually need to show the giraffe staff here. I actually got a picture in Tanzania of some of that drool coming out of a giraffe's mouth and glinted in the sunlight at the particular time I was taking the photograph. So
nice.
I've got wild giraffe doing that drooling as well.
That's hilarious. Very cool. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know I took so much more than we talked about, and I really appreciate it.
No worries. Happy to be here, and hope everybody takes an opportunity to do what they can based on the skills that they have. To again, we've got an amazing world and a lot of amazing people like you helping us keep what we love.
Thank you. Yay! I love a good inspirational message, and Tim definitely had that. I love his story. I love how transparent he was about the fact that nepotism got him rolling with everything, but then he's clearly actually doing the work and has earned his place at the table, which I think is really cool. But I did really appreciate that he, you know, kind of admitted and acknowledged that right off the bat. I thought that was pretty cool. Just a great interview. I thought and when I say that, I'm not tooting my own horn. I could listen to his stories all day. Love the Naples Zoo, really do. So, yeah, I hope y'all enjoyed that one. And I don't really have much else to say. So I guess I'll see you back here on Friday for Zoo News. And of course, I want to say thank you to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett. And then last but not least, don't forget, y'all, the word credits backwards is Steiderk.
The Rossifari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossifari or by email at rossifaripod@gmail.com. Rossifari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.